Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Drex on the next generation of KGO. 810.
And away we go on the Drex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGOradio.com. And as the sun sets all across the northwestern United States and the continent. And Kevin Kelly is my guest. Mr. Kelly, it's an honor to meet you.
It's so fantastic to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I love it. Kevin Kelly helped launch Wired Magazine, and you were the executive editor for 7 years. And wow, so many great things.
We were having a blast at the time when the internet was being born and nobody knew what it was going to be. And we felt that we were at the center of the universe.
You were.
We were trying to tell people this is going to be a big thing.
Yes. I mean, and it's so amazing to think back, and you were at its infancy, Wired Magazine. It was a must have. It was a must read for people like me.
It was, because until that moment, nerds and technological people were these teenagers with pimples in the basement. And we were saying that this is going to be the main event. This is coming. This is going to affect us all. And even your mom is going to be on the internet.
And mom,
nobody believed us at the time.
She still can't figure out Windows 10. I had to take it to the computer shop to get it figured out. But
she's on the internet if she has a smartphone.
That's right. And I got her one. By the way, so we are streaming live on Facebook right now at KGO 810. So join us on Facebook. And Mr. Kelly's book is The Inevitable. I'm holding it up. So go to Facebook right now if you're listening anywhere. Yes, in the northern United States or anywhere around the world.
This is KGO a book Radio. That's made out of paper.
It is made out of paper.
This is a physical thing.
I love it. And I have to tell you, I want to start with this because this happened Friday and it blew me away. And that was Elon Musk, where he said, there is 1 in a billionth chance that we're not in the Matrix. Mm-hmm. Now, what did you think when he said that?
I think it's an unprovable hypothesis, but if you take the logical steps that he got there, it seems pretty logical. It seems pretty reasonable. But there's absolutely no way to decide either way. So this is actually almost a religious statement.
Yes, and so atheism comes into this.
Right.
Yes, and explain that to us. Your thoughts on that.
It's like if you're going to argue about God or the universe being around all the time, or God, it's sort of something you can't prove, so you have to take it on a matter of faith.
Right.
And we're not going to be able to tell whether we're a simulated thing or not, and so this is a religious assertion.
So you must be an atheist to believe that we might be in the Matrix.
No, certainly God could have made the Matrix just to fool us.
Whatever that is.
Exactly.
Yes, whatever that is. And just the advances that we've made in the past 40 years are just phenomenal.
They're amazing. If we had gone back into history 40 years ago and report to people what we have right now, what we're carrying around in our pocket, you would have been laughed out of the room as this is not possible. And you certainly wouldn't be able to have all these things like street maps to the world and stock quotes and instant box scores. For free?
Right.
People will say there's no economic model in which that is even remotely possible.
It's all in the pocket.
Exactly.
Right, and there it is.
And so this is impossible. So part of what we've learned in the past 40 years is to believe in the impossible a little bit more often.
Is it advancing too quickly?
Not quick enough.
Really? That's interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
As far as hypothesis is concerned, why would you say that?
Because
it scares people, I have to tell you, Kevin.
It does. It scares me. And I think one of the things I've learned is that we need to embrace these changes, because it's only by embracing them, engaging them, the stuff that's coming, that we can actually steer it. If we try to prohibit it or back it off or turn it down or stop it, we don't get to actually steer it. And so they're coming. These things are coming. Artificial intelligence, virtual reality, total tracking, sharing more and more, all this stuff is coming, and we have to engage it, embrace it in order to make the most of it. We cannot stop it.
And a lot of it, Kevin Kelly, is already here. And again, we worry about simple things like our, you know, our grocery club.
Right.
Yes, our groceries being checked.
Right.
We worry about the tag readers.
Right.
Yeah. The meters.
Right.
Yeah. The cell phone.
What's even worse than that? You know, every time you send a piece of mail through the U.S. Post Office, the front and back of the envelope is scanned.
Oh, okay.
Every piece. Right. Do you know you're in your car, you have a little tiny chip right now, today, that's recording every move that you make and as you drive along? Do you know that when you go down the highways here, if you have a fast pass?
Yes.
It's being recorded when you cross the intersections. This is, I mean, like, this is today. This is right now.
Right. Right. So it's already happening.
Right.
And I think we throw our hands in the air as, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, because I think that you embrace it. Am I correct?
I'm saying we cannot stop it.
We can't stop it.
We can only make it civil. We can only make it domesticated. We can only tame it. We can't stop it.
Okay. So here's one of the reasons that I'm sort of on your side with not being afraid of it, because there is going to be so much of it. Envelopes us, okay?
Right.
We're enveloped by it.
Yeah.
And so since there is so much information to discern, it probably is overwhelming to the man. Whoever the man is.
Right.
Or the woman. Or the entity.
Right.
Right. Am I right? Exactly.
I mean, yeah. Most people's lives are not of interest to the man because they're just ordinary. And so,
so what do I care?
There's more and more data.
Yeah. But but you wonder, is Alexa listening to me? Obviously, she is at home.
Right.
Yes.
Alexa.
My Samsung television. Yeah. It all started with that. Remember how what was that, a year ago in the Samsung television this month? Oh, it's watching you.
Yes.
It's recording. Now I have Alexa in the house and I know she's listening.
Right, right.
And I really don't give a damn.
Exactly. Right. Well, yeah. I mean, if Alexa's on your side, and this is what we'll have these little conversational bots that represent us, and then they'll dialogue or have their argument with someone else's bot, and we'll let them duke it out. That's basically, it's like, one bot says, tell me the information, and the other, and your bot says, no, what do you need it for? So,
yes. Now, in the inevitable, understanding the 12 technological forces that will shape our future, let's talk about some of them. So number one is becoming, moving from fixed products to always upgrading services and subscriptions.
Right. So there's this, as you say, this barrage of change, which is actually accelerating. And one of the consequences of that is that we are going to be permanent, eternal newbies. We're going to be the person who just arrived having to learn things. Even though we've just learned 3 computer languages, we're going to have to learn another one. Even though we've now mastered how to use our smartphones, in 5 years, that won't be worth anything, and we'll have to learn how to use VR of things. And once we've got that down, oh, that's obsolete, and we've got to learn something else. And it's this constant sense of we are going to be the newbies on the block, and we're going to have to keep learning and unlearning things that we just learned.
You're right about that. So those who think they've mastered code today in
Forget 5 years
won't know anything.
Right. They're going to be newbies.
Now, that's going to scare younger people.
That is. That's going to scare older people, too.
Well, I mean, you know, but I think that when we talk about, for instance, making light of mom. Well, mom couldn't, you know, I told mom, be careful about Microsoft 10 downloading. Yeah. It's going to mess up your computer.
Right.
And it did.
Right.
And so those who are listening who know code and were at the center of the universe for that, they're probably shaking their head. Oh, Kevin Kelly, tell me no. That can't be true that I won't know.
Right. So the language that you're being taught in college is not going to be useful because you're going to have to, when you get to your first job, you'll be learning something new. We actually had this thing when we were hiring people at Wired was hire for attitude, train for skill. It's the attitude about learning and being able to learn new things and how to master them than it is about what you know, because what you know is going to be replaced. So you actually want to have the right attitude, the right approach. That's more valuable.
And that can be applicable to virtually any career. I mean,
exactly.
Passion.
Right.
I think it's probably
attitude, the ability to be able to learn new things quickly and work with others.
I'm going to take a break and we'll be back. How will technology advance and impact our jobs and our livelihoods? I love when I took, let me see here, this is page 59 out of your book where you're answering your own technical questions. This is so much fun. Kevin Kelly is my guest, and his book is The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. There we go. And we are streaming live on Facebook at KGO 810. And we'll continue right after we check in with Lee Graham in the KGO Traffic Center.
KGO. Generation of KGO 810.
We are back. And we are live with author Kevin Kelly. And maybe you know him from Wired Magazine. You're the big guy. You were the big guy for 7 years.
Yeah, I was editing this magazine that was at the center of the universe for at least a decade.
Isn't that interesting? And like I said, I it was just one of those things that even as the internet began, you would still go out and buy a paper magazine.
Because paper was doing things at that time that technology couldn't, like high resolution,
right.
Easy random access navigation,
yes.
All these kinds of things.
Now, so let's talk about, and I love this in your book, it's 2046, so you don't own a car or much of anything else. Paying instead to subscribe to items as you need. Virtual reality is as commonplace as cell phones, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, so the idea is that I think we tend to imagine 25 years from now as sort of like being now, but just a little better. But actually, there's going to be differences from now. I think the thing after smartphones is going to be virtual reality stuff that you put on
sure.
your face or your eyes, at least. And you'll have this other level of reality, which in my own research and trying all these things out, I did that for 5 months, all the latest things, is that these other worlds, these other places feel real, even though your brain knows that they aren't, even though that you know that I'm in a studio right now, but my body feels like it's somewhere else.
It is an extension of the brain.
And I think what we get is this internet of experiences rather than information. So if you have a world in which all these VRs, you can go visit different places and it'll be much social, like social. You have your friends in it. The cool thing about virtual reality is the other people in it. So it's a very social thing. You have your friends or even strangers and you're sharing these worlds. That's the powerful thing.
But will they be real people or will they be?
They'll be real people. You will be at home. There'll be an avatar. You'll have an avatar that I'll see. But here's the thing. I see all your body movements and all the little micro expressions on your face are all transferred. And so because of that, I feel it's really you there, even though it's just this projection of you. That's the magic. It really does work. And it does feel like you're there. And that's the key word. I know that you're not there, but it feels like you are.
Will it isolate us more?
I think that the VR is going to become the most social of all the social media.
Because we really won't. Introverts like myself really won't have to go anywhere,
but I
can be there, but I don't have to go there.
They said that same thing about the beginning of the internet, and what has happened? Air travel has just boomed. The more we have this interaction with the little devices, the more we actually want to see people, the more valuable it becomes to experience it ourselves. And I think the same thing is going to be with VR. The more VR we have, the more people are going to want to travel.
I find it very interesting. Broadcasting, for example, a lot of people are introverted, but this is so extroverted, what we do. Yes,
right.
Talking to millions of people.
Right, exactly.
You know, so
The history of technology is very rarely does a new technology completely make an old one go extinct. In fact, this never happens.
That's
it's
right.
It's always an additive thing. So we have additional choices that we didn't have before. And staying at home inside has always been a choice, but most people will engage in some way. We're becoming more social than ever before.
I love that. So once again, we're not fearing technology. We're embracing it.
Exactly, because that's how we get to steer it.
Kevin Kelly is my guest. So as I mentioned on page 59, in the coming years, our relationship with robots will become ever more complex, but already reoccurring pattern is emerging. No matter what your current job or your salary, your progress will through a predictable cycle of denial again and again. Here are 7 stages of robot replacement.
Yes.
I love this. Okay, number one, a robot computer cannot possibly do the tasks I do.
That's what people say.
Okay, a little later on. Okay, it can do a lot of these tasks, but it can't do everything I do. And then a little later, okay, it can do everything I do, except it needs me when it breaks down. And it does often.
Right.
I love that part.
Right, right.
Because we're still there today.
Exactly right.
Yeah,
but
right?
Then, little bit later.
Okay, it operates flawlessly on routine stuff, but I need to train it for new tasks.
That's what we say.
Which reminds me of Alexa.
Right.
I still can't get her to behave.
Right.
Okay. All right. Later on. Okay. I can have my old boring job because it's obvious I'm okay with not having my boring job. Is that right?
Right.
Because
right.
It's obvious that was not a job for humans ever meant to do anyway.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, right.
Right. Now that I don't have my job, I realize I really didn't want that job anyway.
Right. Wow, now that robots are doing my old job, my new job is much more interesting and it pays more.
Right.
And finally, I'm so glad a robot computer cannot possibly do what I do.
Right. So we go through that cycle again and again.
That's fabulous.
Right, right. So that's by the way, mimicking that whole kind of levels of denial and grief where we at first reject something as being impossible and then it seems perfectly obvious to us. And I think it's the same thing. We're saying, well, robots can't do this. Robots can't play chess. Robots can't drive a car. And then once they drive a car, they say, oh, of course, I'm so glad I don't have to drive a car anymore. And so then we'll think of something else that we can do, and we'll do that for a while, and then we'll realize, oh, my gosh, even the AIs and robots can do that. But then we'll be on to the next thing, and that's what we're doing. So actually, robots and AIs are actually making more things for us to do.
That's good news. All right. Once again, we are streaming live on KGO 810. Kevin Kelly, our tech guru. He's the man, is in the studio with us if you want to watch us live. I find it very interesting, Kevin, that yesterday Swiss voters overwhelmingly rejected that proposal to give its entire population enough money to live on.
Because
automation and robots are going to take our jobs away. Mm. So let's start paying people just pensions now.
Right,
everybody.
Right.
And they, by seven, now everybody probably here was think, what a great idea that. Maybe not everybody, but some people think, oh, that would be great. We don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But by 70%, the people said, no, it's a bad thing. We're not ready.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the issue of how we're going to deal with a lot of people losing their jobs is a very real thing because a lot of people will lose their jobs, the current jobs, the current things that they're doing. Mostly what I think is going to happen is that the automation, the AI, the computers or robots are going to shift the tasks that we do. And so some of our tasks that we do in our job will go to them, but other tasks will be remade, re-envisioned. So a lot of the people who say drive trucks, I would say maybe half of the people who drive trucks in 15 years won't be driving trucks. But they may be doing other things that's truck-related in terms of like scheduling the trucks or figuring out how to optimize the truck routes. So there'll be doing things that are related to trucking, but maybe not actually driving the trucks. So that's going to come, and I think we are going to face some questions about how we can ease that shift because it will be painful for many people.
Right. I think that blue collar and white collar are both
right.
are concerned about this.
Exactly, because AIs right now diagnose x-rays better than most para-doctors. They go through legal evidence better than lawyers. When you're flying in a plane, a long haul across to Europe, the human pilots are only flying for 7 to 8 minutes. The rest is the AI. So this is not just like blue collar jobs. This is professional jobs being impacted by AI.
One of the things that's happening, and I found this today, and I'll let you respond to this. Google is working on a switch to prevent, a kill switch to prevent robot uprising. They actually have their own division. All right. Google's DeepMind.
Right.
Is that necessary?
I think it is. I think that there also Google has a group of people who is trying to teach ethics to the robots. Because when you have a self-driving car, that self-driving car has to make decisions that we as humans will kind of make very fast and not think about, but they are required, the programmers have to think about it. So if a car is going down and there's an accident happening and the car driver, the AI has to decide between going into some pedestrians or turning into a barrier that will hurt the passenger. Does it favor the passenger or does it favor the pedestrians? That's an ethical decision that we kind of don't even try to think about, but the programmers have to think about right now.
Well, the Orwellian thoughts are that we're going to mess this up, or we're going to allow them to mess it up for us.
Well, we allow humans to mess up.
Right.
Do you know that humans kill 1 million people a year worldwide with cars?
I believe it.
We're not worried about that. But the very first person that a robot kills in a car will go crazy.
Oh, yes, the picture of the Google dented something.
But imagine that someone dies. It's like, we'll say, this isn't tolerable.
Right.
But it's okay for us to do a million of them. Why? Because we're bad drivers, and we're not very consistent ethically. But the AIs will actually be better than us. They'll be more consistent. They'll be more thoughtful. They'll be better ethically than we will, and they'll kill less people.
And so then if we're driving and we hit one of them,
right,
we know where that lawsuit's going. It's going to be our problem. All right, the inevitable. Once again, let me hold up the book because we're streaming live on Facebook at KGO 810 with Kevin Kelly, understanding 12 technological forces that will shape our future. And we'll continue to talk about some of those. Yes, there are 11 more to go on the way on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810. But first, with a look at traffic, here's Lee Graham.
The next generation of KGO 810. Now, back to the Drex Radio Show. Drex Radio Show.
All right, we're back. I was trying to find Max Headroom. Kevin Kelly and I were discussing Max Headroom.
Yeah, I think your job is at risk of being replaced by an AI radio host.
Kevin Kelly is my host for the moment, my guest. You're scaring me now. Yes, of the inevitable, he is the author, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. Well, you know, and so I'll say to you what I said during the break, I wonder how many people think, and you said a lot of people do come up to you, older people and middle-aged people, and say, you know what? Glad I'm not going to be here when all that happens.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I hope that I'm dead by if any of this stuff happens.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's a natural response to people who are allergic to change, which is, by the way, most of us. I think that when the actual future comes, they simply are going to be they're going to choose it. And this has been a surprise, is that I think if you maybe – took and what we have today and told someone 40 years ago that what we have today, they might say, well, I don't want it. But once they get here, they want it.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, just the iPhone. Who doesn't want it?
Exactly.
You're right. It has changed the world. In your book, The Inevitable, cognifying is one of the things you talk about.
Cognifying is a word that I'm using, which is not a very good English word, to mean to make smarter.
Right.
So we don't have a good other verb. We don't smartify or smartened. So it's the verb to make things smarter, and that's what we're doing right now with all this AI and artificial intelligence and smart learning is to putting that into everything. And the point about this is that it's going to become like a commodity. You know, like under 50 years ago, we had this thing called the Industrial Revolution, which has brought all this prosperity to us. What we can look around today, that's all been because we made artificial power. Instead of using human muscle and animal muscle, which is what all we could have until 200 years ago, it's the only way you could make anything, we substituted it with fossil fuels mostly. We made artificial power. So we have like 250 horses in your car, basically. That's right. What it means, the equivalent. And so that became a commodity, and we electrified, you know, made this grid where you could get electricity anywhere in the country. You just plug something in. You didn't have to make the electricity. You bought it like a commodity, and you could electrify anything. Take a water pump and make an electric water pump. But now we're going to do the same thing with AI, and we'll have a grid that instead of giving us electricity, it gives us artificial intelligence. And you can buy as much AI as you want. You can buy 250 minds and put it in your car. Okay, not even a smart car that can drive. And so we're going to cognify, make smarter, all the things that we electrified.
Will that be another form of gentrification because I need to buy those gold bricks to get to the next level of my game?
Yes, I think there will be a lot of people trying to keep up with, you know, your thing is smarter than my thing, so I need to make my thing smarter. That would certainly be part of it. But there's also the whole point of all the new things that we never even imagined that we could do if we had 250 minds working for us all the time, day and night, every day of the week. That's the power that we haven't really imagined before.
Kevin Kelly is my guest. He's the author of The Inevitable. We are streaming live on Facebook, 810 right now. And I want to ask you, talking about how quickly things are changing, a report out today by CNBC.com, people are spending much less time on social media apps already, says the report. And for instance, Facebook's Instagram saw the biggest year droppage by 23.7% this year followed closely by Twitter down 23.4, Snapchat down 15.7, Facebook down 8%. So people are backing off of that already. So
my 20-year-old something daughter is not on Facebook anymore.
That's because mom and dad are, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
So Snapchat is the thing, but it's already down. But let me ask you about something about a controversy about Snapchat, and that is the facial recognition so that they can put those silly faces on you, those filters. Now, that you talk about in your book is one of those privacy issues that we shouldn't be afraid of, because last week people were starting to think, that's a little creepy. It's reading my – it's facial recognition.
Right.
Socially.
Right. So we have this issue of what people do with the data. But here's something that's really interesting is there's a type coupling between personalization and transparency. So if we want things personalized, if we want companies or governments or friends to treat us as individuals, they have to know something about it. And so the more we want things to be personalized, the more transparent we have to be. If we don't care about personalization, then we can be kind of private. And here's a surprise, is that when people are given a chance, they're always pushing the button towards more personalization and more transparency. So here's how I put it. Vanity trumps privacy.
And amen it does. Equals Kardashian.
Right.
Yes.
Vanity. And when we get a chance, everyone's pushing it towards vanity.
Right. All right. Let's talk about flowing, because I think when I brought up Elon Musk's conversation about, we're already in the Matrix, the person, the professor who called me from San Jose, was talking about the entire subject of flowing.
Right.
Yes.
So flowing is this idea that we are no longer people of the book, where things are printed in paper and they're stable and fixed and monumental and forever. But instead, things have moved on to screens, where people of the screen instead of people of the book. And on the people of the screen, everything is flowing across. There's streams of music. You stream your video. Your Facebook wall is streaming. There is this kind of continuous stuff that doesn't stop, that just flows across. And those data flows are the current status. And so out of that, we have to assemble truth, because we can't go to a fixed author or authority and get truth. We have to kind of assemble our own truth out of these streams and flows of data. And that's a new thing for us. So we have a very different way in which we know things.
Let's take a call here. Mark and Carmel, good evening. You're on with Kevin Kelly on KGO.
Hey, thank you both. It's a fascinating book. I'm looking forward to reading your book.
It's fantastic.
And I will buy it in hard copy, because I'm one of those old school book guys.
Oh, yay! Yay for old school.
Must have, yes.
You bet. And I'm not comfortable with the screen, but I wanted to ask about singularity. When AI becomes autonomous, and it was kind of the premise for the whole Terminator movie, when we're perceived as the enemy and no longer necessary, and it's superseded us. This is, Hal playing chess and beating everybody involved. It's all of a sudden we're the threat,
right?
And I do see the robotics supplanting a lot of jobs, and I mean, it started with the $15 an hour wage thing, and all of a sudden Wendy's orders 6,000 kiosk guys, and McDonald's and everybody else is going to follow suit, and all of a sudden, it kind of backfired on the industry, because in the next year or so, there's going to be a million low-paid workers out of work, as is with the automated vehicle driving. They're talking about that with big rigs, and there's 1.2 to 1.6 truck drivers across the country that could ostensibly be put out of work. And so where is this headed, and is singularity, how long off is it? Some people say it's 10 years, some people say it's 20 years. What's your opinion, revered author?
All right. Thank you very much, Mark.
Yeah, I think the two versions of the singularity, which for the people who don't know what that term means, it means this idea that there's an intelligence explosion. If you can make an AI that was could make another AI smarter than itself, and then that AI can make another one smarter than itself, and you keep stacking these up, you'd soon have an AI that was like almost infinitely smart, and they could then cure cancer, make us immortal, and then kill us all. That's the idea.
Right. Do we want to be immortal?
Right. I don't know. It depends on what
that is.
What that is. Like, yes. Are we going to be like a blob in a tube? No. So the idea, that's the strong version. And I think that's very unlikely. And the main reason is because most of the AIs that we're making will not think like humans. Your calculator right now, today, is smarter than you are in arithmetic. That doesn't freak you out. It's a very different kind of intelligence. Our own intelligence is not a single kind. We have like 500 different varieties of thinking in our own mind, some of them which we can make in AI. But most of the AIs are going to be different than us.
Well, think about Google, a form of AI. We don't, I Google stuff exactly. All the time, and I don't remember. I don't.
It's better than you are in recall. Right.
That's right.
But it can't do other things that you do. And so most of the AIs we're going to make are not going to think like humans at all. That's the reason why we're going to make them. And the whole thing about AIs is we want to work with them. The best chess player in the world today is not an AI. It's not a human. It's a team of AI plus human. The best health diagnosticians in the world are not an AI, and they're not a doctor. They're doctors plus AI. And so we will be working as teams because they think differently than we do. They need us as we need them. We're not going to make a human-like intelligence because that's actually not really possible. We can make things that are smarter than us in certain directions.
We'll take a break and we'll be back with Kevin Kelly. And he is the author of What Technology Wants, The Inevitable, streaming live on Facebook right now at KGO810. And when we come back, we'll talk about some scary things. I mean, Boston Dynamics and those killbots, say yikes, military applications and stuff like that. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGO810 with a look at traffic. Here's Lee Graham.
Drex on KGO810.
What a great conversation we're having. Kevin Kelly is my guest. You may know him. Yes, he's Mr. Wired. The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. We're streaming live on KGO 810 on Facebook. And during the break, I asked Kevin, I said, what about boom bust?
I'm saying it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
For these long-term trends I'm talking about, it doesn't matter. They're going to happen anyway. They're going to up or down, boom or bust. They're going to continue, and if you're, involved in making new things, innovating things, it doesn't matter either. If there's easy money, take it. If it's hard money, use your ingenuity to find solutions instead of buying them.
Yeah, because if you look back and you were, at the very infancy of the dot-coms,
right,
and
right.
So many of them went away with boom bust.
Right.
And a lot of these companies that are big names today, they're going to go away.
Right, and the people who were involved in them when they failed – we're just going to restart, and they're going to be smarter, better educated, more business-wise than they were last time around. So this is like...
cleaning house.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. I want to ask you about, because I promised I would, Boston Dynamics. Actually, Google, I do believe, was scared of them and the killbots and military applications, let's just
say. So Boston Dynamics is a robot company, and they made these quadruped robots.
They were scary.
They look like... things between a horse or a dog,
yep,
that would run around. And the famous little internet pictures are people kicking them, trying to kick them over,
right,
to show how robust they are. But what it looks like is like they're torturing them. It's like they're going to remember those. Robots are going to remember what we were doing to them. They have long memories.
Well, and then my thought was, can you imagine – one or two or three or five or 10 of them running after you.
Right.
I mean, you're dead meat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's no getting away. So military applications of AI.
Yeah. Okay. You hit a sore spot because actually I had a couple guys from DOD, Department of Defense, came to visit me and said that they want to talk about AI in the military. And there has been no technology that we've invented that cannot be weaponized. And AI, I'm sorry to say, will be weaponized. And this is actually a very serious thing. And I'm conflicted about it because on one hand, I don't want to encourage it. On the other hand, it's inevitable, so I at least like them to be smart about it. And they were asking good questions. And one of the questions that they were asking was, if we make robo-soldiers, which is we're almost there with drones, there's still a human involved in having that kill decision. But if you wanted to speed it up, you would take them out and have the AI make the decision. Would that be terrible, horrible, the worst hell that we can imagine, or maybe the AIs are actually more responsible, less emotional, more rational. Maybe they would do it better than we would.
Well, Kevin, we started this conversation with talking about ethics and morals within right. AI. So, boy, this is definitely when it's, that comes into play.
Exactly. And it's coming very fast. And we don't actually appreciate how fast it is. And I think we should be having this conversation. And civilians should be involved in this and not just people in the military and not just people making the AIs. You should have an opinion about whether you want machines to be making those kinds of decisions and whether or not – you know, do we always want to be the one to kill other people, or do we want to share that responsibility with others?
Well, I often wonder. I mean, even now today, you mentioned drones. These people are sitting in South Florida making these decisions whether to kill people or not. It's not the same thing as when you're next to another human being taking their life.
Exactly. Right. And so we've already abstracted that far. Having the AI assist us in that is just one more step, and it's going to be happening like tomorrow.
And then all of a sudden we become blameless. Well, it wasn't me.
Right, exactly. It wasn't me. It wasn't my fault. It was this other thing. It was the programmers who programmed it. And they claim actually that they're less emotional and they're more accurate and they are less likely to have error or to have emotional bias. And why not have them do it? That's the argument. And it's going to be – we have to have some other counter argument to that.
May I say this on my behalf? I think that sometimes us as Americans, we become arrogant about these things, and we assume that we will be superior with these sort of things. That scares me.
Right. And the reason why the Pentagon was thinking about it is because right this minute, there are other countries who are making robo-soldiers.
Right.
And so even if the Americans don't, other countries will, and we have to have a response. And so the one area that I'm really worried about in terms of technology, which I'm almost not worried about at all, is cyber conflict, cyber war. And the reason why I'm worried about it is that we have no rules about what's appropriate in a cyber war. Like, is it okay to take down someone's banking system if we consider them an enemy? Is that like gassing them, or is that just like shooting them?
And where is the mutual destruction?
Exactly.
Who decides mutual destruction?
Right. And so we don't have any kind of consensus as human beings, and particularly as countries, in part because so far nobody has admitted to the fact that we actually have offensive cyber capabilities that we're already using. Like, for instance, we used it against Sputniks in Iran. But we aren't talking – we don't – no countries are admitting that, so it becomes very hard – to come to a consensus about what's really permitted and what we as humans would accept. What's not going to be permitted in cyber war? What is going to be permitted? We have these other rules, the Geneva Convention for conventional warfare, but we have no consensus.
That's so outdated.
In AI, right. Cyber war, you know, cyber viruses, all that kind of stuff, taking down people's internet. Is that okay? I don't know.
Wow. So when it comes to the powers of the government, do the people need to rise up and make sure? I mean, seriously, I mean, not rise up against the machine, but to stop the machine or stop our own government from making the wrong decisions.
I don't think we can stop anything. I think, again, coming back to my basic idea behind the inevitable is that we have to embrace and engage these technologies. That's the only way to steer them. We can't stop them. We're not going to stop AI. We're not going to really basically stop the weaponization. The only thing we want to do is we want to do that fully engaged in by working with them and using them. We don't actually know what things are good for until we've used them for a while. I really think these pay attention to the way in which people use things versus the way that they were designed to be used. How do people actually use social media? It's not how we thought it was going to be. So I think we need to look at how AI is actually used, how we interact with it, to really be able to understand how we can make it more moral and ethical.
It's coming, so embrace it. Kevin Kelly, thank you so much for being my guest. You were fantastic. Go get the book. Once again, it is The Inevitable, holding it up here, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future, as we broadcast live. Stream live on Facebook at KGO 810. Thank you, sir.
It was my pleasure.
And I'd love to have you back again.
As always.
All right. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Marty Nemko, our career coach, on the way on KGO 810.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry in to the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.